my name is Dave Reske, founder and president of Now Speed Marketing, and welcome to this edition of In the Now, where we focus on uncovering the myths and misunderstandings of marketing and leadership with some of the world's most interesting people. And my guest today is Dan Stokes. Dan is the executive vice president at Jake Stokes Agency in Walnut Creek, California. And I'm excited to have Dan on the show because we've collaborated on a number of client engagements. And I've always been impressed, Dan, with your deep understanding of strategy, combined with your passionate understanding of what it takes to make clients happy, which is often a different thing. So, well, welcome to the show.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
So you want to talk about how to keep clients happy, or do you want to talk about
that? That could be a great topic. Maybe we'll need
more time for that.
Yes, I'm sure we'll stray into that as we have our conversation. But Dan is a very experienced strategic marketer. And according to your bio, Dan, you've focused on accelerating your clients' revenue growth by increasing visibility, driving traffic, generating leads, and building loyalty for both leading brands and rapidly growing enterprises. That sounds exhausting, just as I say that. It sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah, I know. I think it's because we have, been at it for so long that we've covered a lot of ground. So, our day in, day out job is to help our clients, achieve their objectives and growth. So they don't need us if they, they're doing everything fine. And so we're there for a very specific purpose, and that's to increase their business, right?
Yeah. And you do a great job at that. So as you know, I like to start off these conversations with what I call a myth buster question. And the myth I'd like to explore a little bit is brand building. Is brand building primarily a creative design exercise, or is it something more?
Well, it's funny. I think one of the most, misused and misconstrued words in our marketing vernacular is the whole branding, brand phrase, word, whatever. I think people don't quite know where to start oftentimes, when they're young brands or new brands. It's like, how do I get to this understanding of what my brand is and how to express it? And oddly enough, that's true at the global level as well. There's a lot of rethinking going on within branding on a daily basis. So companies of all sizes are kind of have to reconsider what their brand means to their target audiences. So, at the end of the day, branding is based on what others think you are more than who you think you are. Ultimately, a brand is a set of associations that target audiences have about a particular company, product, service, whatever. So, in the branding process, there's this mix of strategy and creative that I think that have to come together, and that oftentimes, although strategy is kind of the first car on the train, it needs to move much farther past that, to really become meaningful, to make an emotional connection, with audiences that, begin to trigger memorability, acceptability, retention, all of those wonderful things that we want our brand to do. I think getting to the right starting point, and this is the kind of the basic building block process, obviously, is finding out what long-term strategic advantages are of any particular company, service, product, whatever it is. We were talking earlier about when I first started, I had a chance to meet some folks from Landor Associates, which was the kind of leading global design firm at the time. Huge. They'd been Bank of America, Levi's, Light Beer, you name it. I mean, they were the big dog when it came to branding. And they kind of coined the idea of strategic branding. And, this is the whole idea that this is a strategic process. And they had a huge one, and they could, generate enormous fees, from global companies to execute, basically coming up with a new logo. But, and at the end of the day, there was, again, talking about strategy leading the train, there was a very lengthy and massive process that went into, the lead up to before anybody started to think about scratching out a logo. And they obviously were, one of the most successful companies in the world doing this, and still are. So it was great to kind of, find that influence, and that really you know, got me involved in learning more about and working with a number of different brand strategists, you know, to kind of sharpen this process and refine it. And so I think as we execute it today, it's a very straightforward process. And again, it can get, you know, very expansive depending upon the goals and the size of the enterprise and things like that. But let's just take kind of a medium-sized company, you know, that's generating, I don't know, $10, $20 million in revenue, and they need to come up with a new brand, refresh a brand. You know, that kind of process doesn't have to be a giant one. But it's, you know, we do all of the background research to, you know, find the strategic underpinnings of what their advantages are, their competitive advantages are, you know, and then we have to turn that into something. So, you know, along comes Simon Sinek and with his how, why, what process, which I think, you know, everybody woke everybody up and it's like, oh, wait a minute, this is how we should do it now. It shouldn't be a brand pyramid. It's going to be we're going to focus on the why of what we do. And what does this brand get up out of bed to do every day that, you know, makes a difference in the world. And so an interesting kind of way to, you know, focus the effort. But at the end of the day, branding's always been about trying to understand kind of some sort of core essence, something that, you know, is bigger than just the stuff underneath it. And, you know, and that's where kind of the creative process comes in. It's like, it's, you know, I think you can work with executive teams and folks in marketing to uncover and outline what the strategic advantages of a company or its products might be. You know, oftentimes those are self-evident and sometimes they're not. But once you get that out on the table, what do you do with it? And how can you, you know, ladder that up to something that's more meaningful, more exciting, more engaging for, you know, the target audiences? And so that's where the creative side comes in.
Yeah, it feels like you've got to have that strategic underpinning or you might easily go in the wrong direction. And maybe that's why that can be really time consuming for clients that don't have that strategy. What do you do when you start that in kind of engagement with a client and they don't have a clear understanding of their strategic differentiation and, you know, the, you know, why people are buying from them and what their strategy is all about? When you realize that they don't have their strategy together, let alone their brand strategy together, how do you kind of bridge that gap?
So again, kind of what is the job at hand? So, you know, we oftentimes have to come in as kind of business strategist light. You know, it's not like we hired Deloitte to come in and do a business strategy and really find out what this firm is aimed at and how that, you know, ladders up from, you know, all areas. Ours is typically focused on the communication side. So we have to do all of the secondary research. We have to do usually some primary research. We need to talk to customers, you know, and get all of that stuff out on the table about what others believe about the firm, the product, the service, and see what's there, right? And so, and obviously with the, you know, the executive teams, they have an idea of what their strengths are. And oftentimes there's uniformity in that thinking and other times there's not. I mean, we've come into very large organizations to find that there was, you know, very differing opinions about what the company was aimed at and what they were good at. And so, you know, building some cohesion up front and getting, you know, teams focused on what the strategic advantages are, I think is kind of the first step. And again, that's, you know, can be a very broad process with a lot of research involved. It can be, you know, a internal process. You know, again, this comes in various sizes based on the, you know, certainly what the client is willing to invest in it and what the need is. You know, but you have to have those, you have to kind of do all of that spade work, you know, to get stuff on the table and then start working with the client to pin it down.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, usually that involves work sessions, right? Workshops.
Yeah. Talking through each element of that to get a clear understanding of where the company's going, what their differentiation is, what their advantages are. And then you've got to turn that into a creative process, right? Copywriting, design. And that's kind of distilling all of those words and ideas into you know, a logo or a tagline or, you know, other communications elements, that's a hard process. How do you kind of bridge that gap between, hey, we've got hours of interviews, maybe we've recorded, and conversations. How do we get to, you know, that the brand, the feel, the look and feel that we all experience?
Yeah. So, I, you know, before we, you know, put pen to paper, if you will, or fingers to keyboard, we would build a brand platform, which is, you know, trying to distill strategic advantages down to three or four main, you know, strengths that we can identify to work towards. What does that ladder up to as a, what they call brand essence, brand truth, true north, whatever. But, you know, what is that? What is that idea? And this, again, this is where some of that Simon Sinek stuff comes in. It's like, well, oftentimes it's the why, you know, why is this brand here? What is it serving? What purpose is it serving? And how is that different than others? And so that process of, again, it's really a process of competitive differentiation, right? So what are our strengths? How are they different than our competitors? What does that ladder up to? Something bigger. And then at the end of that process, as we work through this with the clients, we will write a brand story, which is kind of the articulation of the hypothesis that we've created in the language of the brand, in the tone of the brand, in the voice of the brand. So we can really kind of pressure test it, you know, and say, hey, this is what it sounds like. And it's often, you know, new and surprising to the client. That's one of the most rewarding parts of the work that we do, is that when you, you know, present that brand story and they go, oh my God, that's it. You know, that's what I've been trying to say for years. You hit it on the head. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And so that brand story, it's got to be rich. It's got to be emotional. It's got to be true, right? It's got to be a lot of things. And when you, yeah, hit that nail in the head, you know, it's got to feel good. And then it kind of informs the rest of everything that you're doing, right, for them. And that kind of everything else kind of flows out of that. So what happens when clients try to skip that process and they just say, hey, really, I just want to like a logo thing, you know, and they kind of skip the whole brand story and strategy and understanding of differentiation. What do they miss when they kind of skip all that stuff?
You know, that's where we always used to start. You know, it used to be, hey, I'm going to hire somebody to, you know, I'm getting my company off the ground, or my company's going to the next level. I'm going to hire a designer to come up with a logo. And, you know, that was kind of the first tool out of the box. Right. And I don't think that there's, you know, it's, again, this is where Landor, going back to that example, and other, you know, large global and national strategic design firms, of which there are many, you know, can you use design all by itself, you know, to really differentiate and set something apart? And oftentimes you can. I mean, I think, you know, look at the world of packaging and how, you know, unique packaging can set a product apart from its competitors. So yes, design can be a strong tool in that process. I think that the primary premise of a strategic design is it takes it away from just a designer style. My experience is working with lots and lots of designers over the years, and some, you know, major award-winning top dogs, is that they all have a style, right? They all have kind of the lane that they're comfortable in. And so, you know, if you look at a lot of the logos that are generated by a specific designer, you typically will find some things that are, you know, fairly common to their work. And so it's incumbent upon the strategist to say, hey, you know, are we really creating something that is, you know, in line with the brand rather than just in line with your design style? So, and oftentimes people pick, you know, I like the style of this designer, so I want them to do my logo, and it'll wind up looking like the rest of their stuff. Is it directly aligned with what the branding should be all about? Don't know. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Yeah. So the whole world of logo design is fascinating. And I think, you know, some of the famous examples that just came to mind as you were talking were, you know, the big brands that I think about, like the Nike Swish, or, you know, the McDonald's Golden Arches, or, you know, the Apple, right? So that, you know, those are very, very famous logo examples. But, and I think this is where you're getting, talk to me about the differences you see between the logo, the embodiment of some of this creative, and the brand. Like, how is the Nike swoosh different than the Nike brand?
Well, the symbol and, you know, I think brands evolve, brands change. And so while the swoosh has, you know, remained in place for a long, long time, you know, it's kind of come in and out of prominence. Sometimes it gets bigger, sometimes it gets smaller. It's funny to watch how it's used, you know, as you watch athletics and see like, okay, what's the Nike branding looking like now? And sometimes it's back to the retro stuff that this is the way the brand looked in the 90s, and they're bringing that back to the table. But the brand positioning, you know, is something that is kind of living and breathing. So it can be fairly stable, but how it, you know, what it means to its customers today versus what it meant 20 years ago is often very different. So brand positioning keeps moving. The brand identity, you know, could be fairly stable. If you look at something like Bank of America, you know, what do you want to be telling customers today versus what you were telling them 20 years ago? The logo's the same, but you know, the brand positioning is often very different.
Yeah, interesting. So if you think about like creating the brand strategy, and you do this a lot, so, you know, talk to me about like the kind of clients that are really great to work with that make it easier for you to do a good job. In other words, well, like, what does the client have to have ready, or what kind of people do they need to be in order to get the best work done? And, or can you do this for anybody, no matter what they give you to start off with? Like, what, you know, what kind of clients do you like to work best with? I guess I'm asking.
Open-minded clients. I think, you know, because you don't know where this is going to take you. We had a client come in that was a fairly straightforward business in many ways. It was a commercial furniture company, design company. And we wound up renaming them. And that wasn't something they asked for. It was something that just evolved in the brand positioning process, where we came up with a new name for the company and said, here's another way to see yourselves that really positions you for the future. And they wound up adopting this this new name. And they were like, wow, you know, we never thought we could be this. And oddly enough, the name was BE, period. And so that's when it's really exciting, you know, where you can have the opportunity to put a little stretch in the creative, get them to think about their brand a little bit differently, provided it, you know, it lines up with the strategic objectives, right? So it's not creative for creative's sake. You know, it's creative based on a strategy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so when you have a client like that, or a client that really kind of goes all the way in this branding process, what kind of impact can it make in the company? Is it, you know, does it, you know, when you get that new logo out, does it just help them feel better, execute campaigns better? What kind of impacts have you seen from a really well-executed brand strategy?
I think the it's one of the most fun parts of doing this work is the inside outside aspects of it. So when you do brand strategy effectively, you know, when you hit the nail on the head, it feels good to everybody inside and out. And, you know, if you're going to shift the focus or shift the emphasis, you know, within an existing company, you have to bring everybody along for the ride. They have to be bought in to this new path, right? This new communication strategy, this new identity, all of the above. And so oftentimes, you know, we do not only in the development of this work, do we talk to, you know, the internal stakeholders, but as it begins to roll out, I think it's really important to bring everybody along for the ride and presentations of the new work, understanding of the new work. And, you know, that can be, you know, as small as a company meeting, or it can be, you know, a global rollout, you know, that has to be executed, you know, on a grand scale.
And what happens when you, I mean, when you finish a branding project like that, you know, in my experience, I see some clients kind of say, hey, we've got this brand and we're going to use it for our landing page. It's going to be on the homepage. It's going to be on an ad campaign. That's kind of where I live. And then other clients go all the way. They put it, you know, it's just so prominent in every piece of what they do. They make maybe all their employees wear their logo. They start to just put it in every aspect of their culture and their campaign and all their social media. It's just coming across in a much more integrated, concerted effort. What in your experience is the difference between those kind of approaches, maybe not those kind of clients, but the ones that you see that just go all the way and you say, wow, they're really good at branding and it kind of comes all the way through. And the ones that treat it like, well, you did something good and I want to put it on a landing page or, you know, an ad campaign.
Well, I think, you know, if your company's name was Smith Manufacturing and, you know, and that was your logo, you know, how much can you do with that? Well, I can put it on, you know, everybody's polo shirt and their hat and, you know, I can, you know, put it wherever the brand is seen and I can put it on the website and do all of that stuff fairly straightforward. But, you know, and I think that branding should be used on a 360 basis, regardless of who you are. I think you should, you know, present your brand in a unified fashion wherever it goes. This is the reason why we create brand standards, you know, so that it, brands don't erode from being used the wrong way, creating the wrong perceptions and other things, you know. So I think the structure behind the branding is important. And then, you know, I would want to use it at, you know, at every opportunity I had, regardless of my company size. The ones that I think, you know, get the most bang out of it are when there's really strong brand positioning and, you know, like Apple, you know, it's like people are proud of, I'm an Apple person. So, you know, that logo means a lot to me and it goes everywhere. So not every company can get those kinds of super deep emotional connections with the brand, like Smith Manufacturing. How passionate can you be about that, right? I don't know. Maybe very, if your name is Smith, you own the company. So, you know, again, I think everywhere all the time is how I approach or encourage my clients to approach branding, inside and out and everywhere all the time, right?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I see some companies that take it further, though, even from a visual or identity standpoint. And they take that brand strategy that you might create for them and they turn it into an attitude or like, you know, it embodies all their content. It's the kind of the emotional feeling. And Apple is a great example of that. It's the packaging that comes out of the box. It's the way that you view every piece of content. It's the attitude they take toward the press and the media. It's the way that their offices are designed. It's kind right. of just kind of there. It comes through in everything that they do. And if we just simplify it to like the attitude that they have, how do you get to that level of branding with a company? How do you kind of go all the way there?
And is so
that,
I think,
is that, can any company do that? Or is it just special companies that are super innovative, like an Apple?
No, I think that most companies have the opportunity to do that to some degree. I think what, you know, you walk away with from Apple. So it's a global company that, you know, has spent zillions of dollars in marketing and we're exposed to its messages and its tone of voice and its personalities, brand personality, you know, at scale. So we have an understanding of that brand that we don't have of our Smith Manufacturing example, right? But that doesn't mean that, and it's part of the brand development process, is what is the personality of the brand? You know, if I were to say to you, Fisher Investments, do you get a sense of what that personality is like after watching some of their television commercials and their digital ads? I mean, it's very straightforward, very conservative. You know, it has a lane that it's in, you know, versus a company that is, you know, a fintech company that might be, you know, very expressive and very consumer friendly. And, you know, your net feeling about the brand is that it's going to be easy to use and fun to play with. In the financial world. So I think that, again, that's where the kind of the creative effort behind releasing the strategy comes from, is that can you bring it that far along if you're the one doing the work? You know, so, and that's what I've been proud about, you know, some of the work that we've done is that we really have achieved that and taken some, you know, fairly everyday mundane stuff to a new place. You know, we did that with a home security provider. We created a personality for a brand that you just wouldn't expect that from that kind of a client. And it became very, very memorable, you know, in its market area and known for having a distinct personality and style. So yeah, it can be done.
Yeah, and it's very powerful. Well, personally, I mean, you've done this a lot and you're very good at it. What's the most rewarding for you thing for you personally when you do one of these kind of engagements?
You know, I think that the what's rewarding for me is when I see some of the programs that we've executed kind of continue over time. You can see the impact, you know, that they've had. But, you know, it's like you can't fall in love with that because brands evolve. So the work that I might have been involved in, our agency might have been involved in today, you know, is going to be a lot different, you know, in 5 or 10 years from now, for reasons, you know, well beyond anything we can foresee. Market conditions, mergers and acquisitions, you know, however brands change. So, you know, the rewarding side, I think, is initially it is knowing that you nailed it and feeling that, you know, the people that are approving these decisions, the CEOs, the executive teams that are, you know, saying, God, this is it, you know. And I've had so many of those that are, again, that's really the rewarding part for me, is that we had a brand that had a very kind of distinct position, and but they just weren't that good at expressing it. They knew they had something and they tried to tell us what it is. It's people love us, you know, but we don't quite understand it. And so part of the exercise was to help them understand what they had. And that was very rewarding, because they go, oh my God, that's it. You know, you know, that is what we have. Now we know what to do with it. So again, it's unfortunately sometimes short-lived, but if you've done your job well and you've positioned a company for success, the rest is up to them. You know, they've got to perform, they've got to grow, they've got to keep moving. So,
yeah, absolutely. I love what you just said, that it feels like you're really helping clients understand why people love them, and then embodying that in design and language and making it real for them. And that's a super powerful thing. I mean, you're really changing the world through the work of your clients and helping them be successful. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, in this crazy business of advertising and marketing, you know, which is, you don't know if you are the villain or the hero in any given day, right?
Absolutely.
Maybe. Usually it's how good is my plan working? You know, that's when you're the hero.
Yeah, absolutely. It's good to be the hero, Dan. You're the hero a lot, so you got to feel good about that.
You too.
Well, this has been a great conversation, Dan. I've really learned a lot. And I think that this whole nuance of like the brand versus the logo and the imagery is something that's really confusing for a lot of people, especially a lot of business owners and business leaders. So thank you for unpacking that for us today.
Always fun to talk about, and great to see you all the time.
Thank you. And if people want to get in touch with you and learn more about your company's services, how would they do that?
jstokes.com.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll be working much more together in the future, Dan. Thanks for taking it. Take care.
Thank you.